Chapter 20. Tony wanted to die on a calm day, but the weather was becoming increasingly worse. The winds were variable and generally high. The sky was overcast much of the time. Squalls were numerous and nasty. This was the beginning of the hurricane we were to learn about later, the most disastrous hurricane remembered in the South Pacific. It was fortunate, perhaps, that we were unable to recognize the signs of what was in store. When the clouds blackened and the wind rose, the sea grew angry and lashed us viciously. Even with the canvas anchor, it was difficult to control the boat. We were continually drenched and often in danger of upsetting. Worst of all, we had little strength left for fighting. The weakness hit us all at once and left our ravaged bodies full of pain. Our morale, too, was lowest when we needed it most. The rain came often and mercilessly. The squalls were cold now, miserably cold, and we huddled together to keep warm. We were almost without flesh, it seemed. When we lay down in the bottom of the boat for warmth, we were wedged together, and our sharp bones bumped painfully. The only way I could stretch out was to lie in the middle of the boat, the two boys one on each side. Tony's hips would be punching into me on one side, Jean's knees and elbows digging me in the back. We could lie together in this position only a short while until our circulation would be cut off. Then we would have to get up and stretch to make our starved and sluggish blood move again. Often we would deliberately leave several inches of water in the bottom of the boat, as it was warmer than the air. When we sat up, the swift wind blew needle-point spray that seemed to penetrate our tender skin. In our dry mouths, our foul-tasting teeth chattered until they ached. None of us thought very much about talking and carrying on a conversation. We grew away from that toward the last. Things were becoming serious. We could see that our end was approaching one way or another. We must be saved soon, or we would die. Tony and I seemed to be able to take it a little better than Jean. He would beg us to talk to him, and then the only thing he was willing to talk about was food. I made a constant effort to be affable and agreeable with both boys, as I knew we were under a constant strain, and I felt that it was up to me as leader to do all in my power to maintain good feeling and harmony amongst us, in an effort to ward off the tendency we were all showing, so obviously, to brood over our position. Clearly, our courage was beginning to fail us at this point. When we had our sip of water in the middle of the day, we tried imagining it was coffee. The tiny drink would buoy our spirits, and we could conjure in our minds a good meal to go with it. Sometimes we would go to Jean's house and have a big dinner of his Missouri hickory smoked ham with all the fixings. Another time we would visit Tony's, where we ate all kinds of Polish food. One of his favorite dishes was what he called pigeon in a blanket, made by rolling hamburgers in cabbage leaves. It sounded good to us then, and we devoured it in our minds. Again, we would go to my ranch, Calavo, in La Mesa, and stuff ourselves with avocados and oranges. Despite my own distaste for this self-torturing conversation, I didn't discourage it, for at least it occupied our minds more pleasantly than any other thoughts we had. After the 28th day and the last coconut, we realized at last that we were starving. I am convinced that the small amount we ate contributed nothing toward maintaining our strength. The few unpalatable mouthfuls made our suffering worse, if anything, by stimulating the hunger and starting our juices to work against us. Inevitably, we discussed cannibalism. One of the boys suggested one day, "Suppose one of us starves to death. Of course, one of us would go first. What should we do with the body?" Tony had shown a horror of being buried at sea on a rough day. The warsman knows when he goes to sea that he may not see land again. Many of us have seen a comrade's body given to the waves, and we are conscious that the same fate may await us any day. Tony had said that he wouldn't mind meeting Davy Jones on a calm, beautiful day. He'd be perfectly happy to go if the sun were shining and the sea was still. Tony was the thinnest of us, and I think he had an idea that he would die first. Perhaps also he had a horror of being eaten. I think that may have been one of the reasons why he suggested now that we should jump over the side and end it all. When he recalled this later, he said he didn't think he really meant it. And again, I believe him. At any rate, we put the question before the house. If one of us should die, should the others eat his body? One of the boys suggested that it might be a good idea to eat part of the dead man anyway. We talked the proposition over at length. Finally, we all agreed that the survivors should eat the heart, liver, and other such organs. Today, I don't believe that any of us had a real intention of stooping so. I'm sure I didn't, and I don't think the others did either. But it offered a new source of conversation to us, and we threshed it out thoroughly. I kept my eyes closed most of the time now when the sun was out. Days and days of watching the glaring water had strained my eyes until I could look into the distance for only a few seconds. Then things would begin to blur. Afterward, they pained me greatly, and finally I reached the point where even at night the reflection of the moon on the water hurt them. In the fourth week, I had noticed that my feet and legs were losing their sense of feeling. This began in the feet and moved upward, a little farther each day, until the partial paralysis reached my hips. Practically all of the time we spent sitting or lying in the bottom of the boat, which required us to pull up our knees. Eventually, I felt as if I had rheumatism. The suffering was intense when I tried to lie down in the tortuous position that the limited space required me to take. The pounding of the choppy waves beneath the fabric bottom nearly drove me mad. Every night I thought, tonight I am more tired than I have ever been before, so maybe this time I can sleep. And every night the monotonous, jarring hammer beneath me, coupled with the always unexpected drenching from above, drove me to sit up and wait for more favorable conditions. No more favorable conditions ever developed. As time went on, exhaustion closed around me like a tightening hand. I had to drive myself to think. Fatigue and pain of infinite variety loosed the reins on my temper. When I spoke to one of the boys and he didn't answer but continued staring straight ahead, I sometimes forgot that he was under the same strain as I and raged like a madman. These outbursts never lasted long. I had not the strength. There was never an answering violence in the boys. They had not the energy, or didn't care, or didn't know.